into place, Roman. I will be there.
I do not understand, but it is only the one called Alice that I want to see.
Here I am, Roman. Where shall we meet?
Do you know the area of the fork of the two dry rivers? There is a ruin there. I will meet you in an hour, but you must be alone.
I will be there.
You will not. Have you gone crazy?
He's played every other card. Why not try this one?
Do you realize what you're doing?
If there's a chance I can strike a better bargain than Father, then I'm the one to go.
Is Alice going to have a date with Roman?
This is madness, Alice. Roy, you have to speak to her.
I know I'm not in the family, Alice, but your father's right.
You mean there are certain things nice girls don't do? Even if it means that man's millions of years of struggle up from the sea, the slime, the fight to breathe air, to stand erect, to think, to conquer nature. Even if Alice is stopped cold by a doting father and a jealous suitor.
I just don't happen to believe that any human being should degrade himself in order to survive.
You'd rather just have us go out of business, is that it? Letter returned, no forwarding address? Can't you see you're being sentimental idiots, letting your emotions run away with you?
Perhaps that is the quality of being human. The very thing that makes us different from Roman. The difference we are trying to preserve.
Very pretty talk, but I still intend to do something about it. Get out of my way.
You're not going.
I said get out of my way!
And I said you're not going.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, and really he's the only one who showed up today, Sam Stepanenko.
Jay and I are the only survivors of Roman's invasion.
Yes, we are. Jeff had some family stuff to deal with, and Trish skipped ahead till next week for her viewing, so she actually watched the wrong stuff, which is fine. She's well ahead for next week, but she said she's going to watch Robot Monster from 1953 and give you her thoughts next week when we get into our final episode of Alien Invasion April. But this week, it's just going to be the Sam and Jay show. And yeah, it's been a while, man.
It has been a long while.
Yeah, we're going to be remaking Robot Monster from 1953, which, you know, if I'd seen this as a kid, I don't remember it. I remember there's little bits about it that were familiar. And obviously the monster is more famous than the movie itself. And for fans out there, if you don't know what Robot Monster is, Mystery Science Theater did cover this. This is the infamous monster movie with the gorilla suit with a helmet on its head. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And not at the same time. It is widely regarded as one of the worst movies ever made, right up there with Plan 9 from Outer Space, which we've done.
And it's still not as bad as A Night to Dismember.
No, we actually have done worse, folks.
Yeah, this one was fun to watch, and it actually did have a coherent storyline.
Yeah, you could follow it. It was a bit piecemeal. Like, it was shot really fast, so, and it kind of looks that way. The camera work's kind of dodgy. The acting's pretty stiff, but I have a feeling these were a lot of one takes, because from what I was reading, it was shot in like 4 days. Depending on the source, I did hear somewhere it was 4 weeks, but 4 days seems to be the one that I see most places. So, and four days makes sense.
Well, it's an hour and 2 minutes, and there's a lot of reuse of footage throughout the movie.
It's stock footage, so, yeah. And short bits of stock footage. So it's stock footage from other movies. that I use over and over and over again, sometimes within the same scene. Like, it'll just like, okay, the lizards wrestling from 1 million BC, which, hey, we covered in episode 171.
Yes, we did.
It's funny how many and of those I recognized.
Yeah, I what the fuck when I saw that. I'm like, what the fuck? This doesn't even fit with where the movie was at all. It's like, all of a sudden, there's just like dinosaurs fighting. And I was like, I'm really confused right now. And I'm like, what, 10 minutes into the movie, if that?
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on there. Initially, you have the kids playing, and they even said playing in a forest, but there was no trees around anywhere. So I was a little puzzled by that. And then we get the dinosaurs wrestling out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. I mean, you get the flash of the alien invasion, and then all of a sudden it's the dinosaurs fighting, and immediately you're like, that's 1 million years BC. And then it goes into the kid waking up outside the cave again, and I'm like, I do not understand what just happened. And I still don't understand what they were thinking with that part, but.
No, I don't either. There's stock footage, of course, from 1 million BC from 1940. The stop motion Triceratops was from Lost Continent from 1951. There's also stock footage from Flight to Mars from 1951. The spaceship was from Rocket Ship XM from 1950. And the New York City matte paintings were from Captive Woman from 1952. Somebody did his research.
No shit. That's, yeah, I knew a couple of them, but I didn't delve that deep. But I mean, I'm in the midst of home rentals, so I watched the movie, I made my cast list.
And then you made cabinetry.
And then I made cabinetry, yeah.
As you do.
Yes. Yeah, but I still made it to the show.
Well, we knew Jeff wasn't going to be here.
Yes,
we didn't know Trish. She logs in and like, I've been watching a lot of, I'm not going to tell you because that's next week. And then we both went, that's next week. She yeah. went, oh shit. But she's been balancing coursework with the show.
With work. And the show.
Which yeah. is funny because she did the more viewer heavy work this week instead yeah. of next week. This one was an easy one because this movie only has a runtime of 66 minutes. So it's not a big time suck. And you can find it free on YouTube.
Or Tubi.
Or Tubi. Or probably most other cheap ass streaming places that can't afford yeah. actual content.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's. Pretty widely available.
Yeah, public domain.
Which maybe means some t-shirts.
Yeah, maybe. I would love to have a Roman t-shirt up in our store.
We'll figure a way to make it happen. There's some other stuff I have to work on, but I want my house back together before I do any intensive design, I'm afraid.
Well, watch our store. We'll hopefully get it up there eventually. Yeah. Maybe by the time you hear this, maybe not.
We'll see.
So have you seen this before, Sam?
I had seen parts of it, but I'd never seen it in its entirety, no.
Right. Yeah. If I had, I didn't recall much of it. Some of it was familiar, some of it wasn't. I know I'd seen at least parts of it in documentaries. I have a feeling I did see it once, which was probably enough. It was probably when the Space Channel kicked up here in Canada, where they were doing a lot of that easily accessible 50 stuff to fill out their station until they could buy more stuff. Now you can't find any of that stuff on their station, but initially it was a lot of black and white stuff. So I got to see a lot of cool old sci-fi stuff, and that was this might have been one of them. I don't know.
Yeah, and it may have been on PBS or something when I was younger, but like I said a couple weeks ago, is that yeah, I didn't really get access to PBS until I was a little bit older and didn't quite engage with the black and white stuff like you did, because I was just already into modern color films and all that stuff. But so yeah, I may have just skipped right over it if it was available. But yeah, like the monster's iconic.
It is, like, and you've seen riffs on it, like Simpsons I think have used it, and probably Saturday Night Live. You see the monster over it, even inspired an SCP. Do you know what SCPs are?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, the SCP Foundation, it's this writer's common that. It's this writer's experiment that can only exist on the internet, where it's kind of like X-Files with these weird anomalies that have been contained. Some are dangerous, some are not. And SCP-2006 is very much inspired by Roman. And the general gist of it is this shape-changing creature who wants to scare people. That's its function. It wants to scare and create horror in people. So to keep it from being dangerous and contained, they make him watch low-budget 50s movies, so he mostly appears as Roman.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if he was exposed to the real fears of humanity, you know, the anybody's primal fears like spiders or whatever, or suspense and actual horror, or the threat of nuclear destruction, or the fear we all live under with the virus, and being able to change into something like that. So to keep it docile, it's going for more of the jump scare stuff that from the 50s, the kind of cheesy stuff, and to contain it. It doesn't understand people and can't read body language and stuff. So the guards just have to be act afraid. And then it's satisfied. And then it's very affable after that. It's like, ah, I gotcha. And then it's happy. So yeah, that's the story, the basic story of SCP-2006 and its connection to this movie. But yeah, go check it out. That stuff, I'm kind of addicted to the SCP stuff because there's all sorts of fascinating write-ups and creatures and creations over there. And it's thousands and thousands of SCPs over there. It's amazing what this weird collective of people have done over there. It's something that could only exist on the internet. And it's awesome.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's totally awesome.
No, I think I will.
Yeah. You go down the rabbit hole and you'd be at it for hours and hours. I don't know if I'll ever get through all of the content, but there's definitely some fascinating creatures there.
Oh, sounds like fun. Speaking of Roman and the Great Guidance, do you think that they were also kind of the inspiration for the Borg in some ways?
I doubt it, but
there's some definite similarities there.
Yeah, it is. The basic plot of this is these creatures have discovered this intelligent life on Earth. It's the only one in their galaxy, and they figure it might be possibly a threat. In a way, it's kind of the same plot from Day the Earth Stood Still or Invasion from Mars, which we did cover in a previous episode, where they see the potential threat. In this case, they want to wipe it out first.
Yeah.
It's simple, nonsensical, and also the daydream of a little boy. Spoiler. That was kind of a last minute throw in on this movie to kind of soften its very nihilistic viewpoint.
Yeah. And part of me is like, I get why they did it, but part of what made this as much fun as it was the fact that there were 8 human beings left and you only get to see 6 of them on screen. Like, it was complete annihilation.
Yeah. From a death ray. Like, well, if you have a death ray that can go planet wide, why do you even need to be there? You just bounce it off a satellite, wipe them out. You don't even need to be there. I guess it's the one, because it really was the one Roman who's communicating back home to the Great Guidance. But maybe he's just there to operate the equipment. He's basically a lab tech.
Yeah, basically.
who's kind of like, oh, there's 8 left? My instruments didn't see that. Well, I guess I got to handle that personally. Huh. I don't want to, but I will. Yeah,
you kind of got that impression. It was like, oh, man. Kind of thing from him is he just didn't want to have to deal with it, and he certainly didn't want to acknowledge that there was a mistake.
No, it seems like he was kind of constantly in touch with his boss.
Yeah, there was very strange dynamic there, but then I mean everything about this movie was strange. I mean the kids were strange, the dynamic between the professor and the mother was strange, because forgive me if I misread it, when they first see the professor, it kind of got the impression that he was sort of a stranger. And then all of a sudden, he's the father. I mean, maybe I missed a connection there, but I didn't get the feeling from his first introduction that he was part of the family.
No, I felt the same way. And it's even weirder when you realize, okay, this whole thing's a dream. So why is the kid dreaming that this professor that he just met is now his dad?
Yeah.
So I didn't quite get that one either. But that's how mishmashy this can be sometimes. You just kind of roll with those, the framing sequence is so awkward.
Yeah.
Now, from what I could tell, like, reviews were obviously terrible for this movie. But one of the things that did stand out for it, this movie was originally presented in 3D. Hey, does that sound familiar? I may have run the trailer back in, cult movie trailer, a go-go 3D.
Just a few short months ago.
Yeah, I don't just do those for fun, you know. Well, yeah, I do. But they might actually roll into something else. Huh?
They might.
Like right now. That was the one thing they actually wound up doing really well for this movie, apparently. Now, of course, Sam and I watched it in good old-fashioned 2D, but apparently the 3D stereoscopic was well-received and looked really good. Now, the actual filming wasn't so good, but it did require another camera and added a little over $4,500 to the budget. It's massive budget of only $16,000.
So it was a full third and a bit of the budget.
Yeah, just for these 3D cameras. But ironically, it was the thing that they were most celebrated for. Now, despite it being trashed, it did go on to make about $1 million, which is a quite successful movie.
You put that into today's perspectives, that is a fucking blockbuster.
Sure. For that kind of investment, everybody must have been happy.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Poor director Phil Tucker, though. The negative press plus the fact that the company, the production company, refused to pay him led to him almost committing suicide over this movie. He was only like 25 at the time. He hadn't made much stuff at this point. This was like his first feature and he didn't get paid. Thankfully, somebody in the press got a hold of his suicide note and was able to stop it. And then he did go on to a pretty good career after that. The directing career didn't get much above these levels. Most of them didn't have much better reviews, but he did eventually shift into film editing and would go on to work on things like Orca and King Kong, the remake, which we did cover in episode 78. That middle one, that 80s remake, he edited that one. So he did wind up working on a lot better films as an editor.
Yeah, it was like post-production manager or something like that.
Yeah. He had editing credits and post-production credits, so he was probably overseeing the editing in that particular case. But he went on to a good post-production career afterwards. I looked through his 50s resume, his directing resume, and his, once he moved into post-production, but almost everything he did was like rated around the same on IMDb. Like 3.5 was as good as you could get.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that's just what these directors get, right? Is they get the script or they get the, or he's a director for hire. It's like, yeah, you've made these movies before. You do them cheap. You do them quick. Here's a job.
Yeah, ultimately, if your movie made money, who gives a shit about the review? The companies are going, oh, fuck, he made that on $16,000. Yeah, everybody hated it, but it made $1 million. That's money.
Exactly. And he did it on a shoestring and he did it quick.
That's actually got to look pretty good to people.
Yeah. Maybe not the best pedigree, but hey, works work.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're talking millions of dollars.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's run the trailer one more time in case you didn't catch it in Cult Movie Trailer A Go-Go 3D. We're going to run it again right here. Here's the trailer for Robot Monster from 1953.
Of a deadly cosmic ray, the Earth is invaded by indestructible moon monsters. Their ghastly mission, death for all humans. What astounding technical developments are being made to protect mankind? Robot Monster brings you an actual preview of the devastating forces of our future. Unsuspected revelations of incredible horrors that will terrify you with their brutal reality.
There is no escape from me. Very well. I will recalculate. Your death will be indescribable. Fool humans, there is no escape.
That was the trailer from Robot Monster from 1953, based on a script from Wyatt Ordung, who wrote Target Earth from 1954, and Monster Maker, also from 1954, which he directed. Music was by I know Sam had sent me a text that the music was, oh my. But it was done by Elmer Bernstein, who's a very accomplished musician in film. At the time he made this, this was just what he could get because he had been graylisted because of McCarthyism and his some of his left-wing views. But he did things like Ten Commandments, The Great Escape. He worked on Ghostbusters, which we covered in episode 50, and The Magnificent Seven, which we covered in episode 105.
Well, lots of connections here that I just didn't bother looking that deep into it. It's interesting. The music in those opening scenes was really oddly out of place. And then once you got into the dream stuff, the music actually was quite good and fit really nicely into the whole sort of whatever the story was, because there is sort of what is this story kind of thing happening there. But yeah, it was just that opening sequence with that really light and bright music. And I understand what they're trying to do, but it just was really jarring. Maybe it was just the way it was mixed into the audio mix. I don't know, but it was just really noticeable. If I notice the music, then there's something wrong because I don't usually notice it.
Well, you know, as I said before, this hadn't been intended to be like the dream of a little boy. It was just supposed to be a monster movie. So I have a feeling that stuff was shot afterwards to soften it, which means the timeline for delivery was probably pretty short. So you had to probably come up with something really quick and didn't give it a whole lot of thought. We just need something bright and punchy. And it does stand out like crazy. It's very obtrusive.
Yeah. And he may not have even done that part of the music. Just because he's got the credit for the soundtrack doesn't mean he did all of it. And that could be like some sort of public domain type music like we get off YouTube now where somebody just said, here, yeah, use this. And they're like, oh, hey, it's bright and light. Let's throw it in.
Yeah, that's also likely. Yeah, that might have happened, especially considering how much they did wind up using from other sources.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, directed by Phil Tucker, who, of course, was the production manager on King Kong from episode 78 when we covered it there. This stars George Nader as Roy, who was, this could be a hint about next week, in a movie called The Human Duplicators from 1965. Gregory Moffat was Little Johnny. He was in something called Saddle Tramp. I just love some of the titles I came up with this week. And these are real movies, folks. Claudia Barrett was Alice, and she was in Escape from Zoraine. Selena Royal played the mother. I think her character's name was Martha, but they only credited her as mother. And she was in Joan of Arc. She was another one that was kind of a victim of the House Committee of Un-American Activities, McCarthyism, as it were. And she was branded as a communist sympathizer simply because she wouldn't attend the hearings. Of course, like a lot of actors would later get cleared, but that pretty much derailed her career for the rest of her career. She could get a few things out here and there afterwards, but never had the status she had prior to it. Malong was the professor, and he was in a movie called Captain Scarface. I just like the thought of Captain Scarface. Think of a pirate version of Scarface.
Which one, too, right? I mean, a pirate version of Al Pacino Scarface?
Yeah.
I would see that, yes.
Yes, that's exactly what the thing I was imagining. Pamela Paulson was the little girl Carla. This was pretty much her only thing she ever did. And they did something rather startling for a 1953 movie, anything from the 50s, really. They killed a kid.
Yes, they did. And I'm like, wait a minute. Whoa. And it actually elevates this movie a little bit to me.
Yeah.
Because they weren't that dark.
I mean, it happens off screen, but then they find her body. I'm like, whoa, he did kill her. Holy shit. I thought he just captured her.
No, he actually explains how he killed her to the Great Guidance.
Yeah. No, I was just shocked, which I didn't think would even happen. George Barrows was the monster, Roman, and he was in something called Hillbillies in a Haunted House. That's great. But he actually had a very long career, and because he built that gorilla costume himself, and he actually would wind up using it in another movie later on down the road with the actual gorilla mask. But he played little kind of monster roles and small roles, but he had a long career doing it. And
yeah,
the voice of Roman was John Brown, who we do have some connections to. The first one would be 190.
Strangers on a Train. I was really pleasantly surprised to find that connection, too.
Yeah. And again, just recently, episode 284 from last week.
The Day the Earth Stood Still.
That's right. And that's the cast, man. There are two other characters they mention, and it's just mentioned in dialogue, and they are attempting to go to a space platform where there might be some more humans residing and hopefully mount a comeback. But, you know, if you're going to launch into space from an alien, it's going to probably spot that. And yeah, they got blown up. We never saw them, so we don't feel too bad about it.
No, it felt like filler, to be honest. It's like they're going, this movie's not going to be long enough. Okay, we'll add a couple more characters, but we're going to kill them off. And that will be some of the drama, is killing off these characters that you have no connection to.
Yeah. If somewhere out there, there needs to be a little side film of what happened to Jason and McCloud.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of where I'm going with this is I would ditch the whole dream sequence. I think I would go with the dark storyline that it was originally intended to be and have that sort of concept of how do we rebuild the human race with this small group of interconnected people. So you're going to need a bigger gene pool, and that space station is the only hope.
Well, I'm with you as well. I was thinking of definitely ditching the dream sequence, but I was thinking a little more in progress invasion, because I mean, that's kind of the most interesting part. We didn't get to actually see the invasion.
No, it was a flash of light and then everybody's gone.
Yeah. And I mean, if it's that easy, especially now, it's like, well, just bounce their death ray off satellites. Nobody has to kind of even come down here, unleash some virus and be done with it. But that's not interesting. So you need to peel it back a little bit. And unfortunately, I think we got to get rid of the death ray. That means our characters can't come up with the cure for everything. Yeah. That fucking happened.
It did.
Like, yes, we cured everything. Too late. This kid, yeah. If this is a dream sequence, this kid really thought highly of this dude he just met in a cave.
Yeah. Creepily so. Like, it's, yeah, he's like obsessive about this guy.
Yeah, to want him to be his dad.
Yeah. And he's a miracle worker on top of it all.
Yeah. And not even the central character, you know, he did all this stuff, but he doesn't do a heck of a lot. We got Roy, who's the love interest for Alice, who conveniently just loses his shirt halfway through the movie.
Oh, it's just so weird. And like everything about that romance is creepy too.
Well, yeah. First they tie her up so she doesn't go meet with Roman, who's kind of infatuated with her. And then just let her go when they need to go find Johnny. Oh, no, we're not going to go look. But, yeah, send out the girl we just tied up to go look for Johnny.
Yeah.
And then he kind of forces himself upon her in the bushes.
Yeah.
And then they're just making it in the bushes for the rest of the movie, really.
Yeah. And but they got married on top of it all. It's like, well, we've got news for you. That institution is kind of done. At least for the time being.
Well, I understand the old traditions, the wanting to be maintained, but it was all just filler to make the movie a little bit longer.
That too. And that brings up one of the other things I'd like to do with it is Roman's sort of interest in the teen girl was, it didn't make sense really, but I think if you sort of lean more into the sort of focusing on her as a study of human nature, kind of like they did with the original The Day the Earth Stood Still, going back to last week, where sort of that's what changes his sort of perspective on human beings, rather than sort of this I want her and I don't know why thing that he's got going on.
Mm-hmm. In my vision of this movie, I want this to be a full-on invasion. Like, and this is kind of this feels a little more modern in my mind, where you wouldn't send people, like if you're traveling across the galaxy and whatnot, you're probably going to send drones like we do to Mars, right? We're going to send things we can remote control or whatnot. So I was thinking, okay, we've got, and I wanted to try to keep certain aspects from this movie. So we've got these orbs that contain this energy or whatever, these orbs that are sent to Earth. Now, what these orbs, these drones do is attach themselves to the life forms to give themselves bodies. Now we can do the gorilla with the thing, the fishbowl on his head, and it all makes sense. When it clamps down on it, of course, the energies and stuff just eat away at the skull. So I want the skull kind of rattling around in this fishbowl.
Oh, I kind of like, no, I don't kind of like that. I really like that. That would be fun just to do.
Oh, as a visual. But I mean, it's not just doing a gorilla, but I mean, we've seen lots of great gorillas in movies these days because of modern special effects, but we could have some certain ridiculous stuff because we are taking this from ridiculous movie that's lauded as one of the worst. So let's lean into the silly a little bit as well. I'm thinking that this is going to be sci-fi horror comedy, right?
Invaders from Mars, that's where I was kind of thinking too.
I would love if one of these things went into the ocean and realized, well, these are useless. So attach itself to another body, but we see this fish swimming around in there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it would attach itself to humans. We could see it attached to dogs, cats, whatever, right? And that could be really fun. Now, Roman could be one of the more leaders of what's going on. Of course, you do need a central alien, so you default back to the one we're most familiar with this movie. But now we've got a nice big invasion that's really visually interesting as well.
Yeah, I'm liking where you're going with this. I'm really liking where you're going with this. Roman and the Great Guidance can be sort of merged into sort of that one central figure.
Yeah. The whole phone home thing didn't make much sense either. So, yeah.
The bubble phone?
Yeah, the bubble phone. Which got a great credit in the movie.
It totally did. That was awesome.
The bubble machine had a bigger credit than the actors did. But this ridiculous. It was basically this thing with the TV antennas sticking out with bubbles going around, and that was the communication device. And it just, all these bubbles coming out. And like, no wonder the kid would kept going back to the cave. I'm like, ooh, fun bubbles.
Yeah. And for a while, I'm like, what are all those things? It took me, because for the film quality was so bad at first, you didn't realize there were bubbles. It's like, there's just these lights floating around it. And maybe that was what they were trying to do with the bubbles.
I saw a nice cleaned up version. So yeah, no, it was definitely bubbles. Yeah. I don't think they were trying to go for anything fancy like that, but I guess that was the special effect they could afford on 16 grand. The budget was so low. That's the reason why they went with the gorilla suit, is they couldn't afford to build a robot.
No,
despite being called Robot Monster.
Well, yeah, I guess his head was supposed to be robotic. I mean, and that was the funny thing, is I'm like, well, is that like to protect him from the atmosphere? If it is, then what's the point of invading a planet? Because they do talk about how they were going to inhabit it. If you need a helmet, then this planet's no good to you.
Well, and if you're a robot species, and clearly they're more like cyborgs, then again, like, I don't know, but I like that what I've come up with, this invading army that is basically remote controlled.
Yeah.
And you're using the planet's own populace. Now, I mean, Roman was fairly clever too. Like, he had tricked humanity into launching a nuclear strike on itself.
Yes.
By launching its initial death ray, the nations thought it was coming from their enemies, so they launched nukes and counter-strikes. So did a lot of the work for Roman to begin with.
And I did like that. That was actually really, really – like, there's some really bright writing in here.
Yeah. And I mean, that was interesting from a 1951 standpoint, but from a modern standpoint, do you want to irradiate the place you are trying to take for yourselves?
Yeah. And I think if you approach it from they're a threat to all of the other inhabited planets, like all the other intelligent species, is it an extermination mission or is it an inhabitation mission? And that's, I think, where the movie got a little befuddled, is what is it, right? Is it extermination or is it to inhabit? If it's extermination, then it makes complete sense. But if it's inhabitation, then it makes no sense whatsoever, unless they're immune to that type of radiation.
Yeah. Now, from our standpoint, if you're sending drones to wipe out the populace and clear it off for an invasion that's already happened, now you can colonize.
Yes.
So right. I don't know if we want to take it from that viewpoint, but it does make more sense. You've now eliminated the populace that's going to rebel, and you can take over the planet and all its resources. And it's been done for you remotely through your drones.
At no risk to your populace.
To your populace, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably a better way to go, because it gives them – it makes the monsters more monstrous if they're attacking for their own personal benefit rather than perceiving human beings as a future threat. Because realistically, we're a long ways away from being that threat, whereas our planet still has value. And I can see them going, well, if we wait too much longer, they're going to suck it dry of every resource that's available. So we need to do it now, kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that. And it has a nice environmental message. Now, I'm like imagining this is kind of going to be on that Mars Attacks kind of level of science fiction. A lot of invasion, a lot of destruction, but you do want to have your central characters. So what are we going to have our central characters do? Are we still going to have like that family unit, or are we going to have a more diverse group of people? I mean, obviously our casting is going to be based on the original group of people, but our movie doesn't necessarily have to follow that.
That's true. No, I think that the family unit is always fits well because it gives people, like viewers, something to connect to, right? Like not everybody can connect to like the sort of grandiose presidential leader kind of character or the military leaders. They should be there, but I think you still need that family as sort of a focal point, right? What happens with them is different. Could be different because we're changing the story enough that we don't need them to be isolated in this little valley or desert or wherever the heck they are with no shelter. You know, so like they're just sort of like three walls and no roof.
Yeah, there's ruins of a house. It was actually shot on this Hollywood hill. And the cave itself is a very famous and popular shooting place. They still use it. It's in Bronson Canyon and most famous for being the Batcave from Batman 66.
But yeah, no, and it is recognized, but you actually, it's like that rock thing that they use in Star Trek and Bill and Ted's, and it's just one of those sort of iconic film locations.
Yeah, it's been in other movies we've covered. Dreamscape, it was in that. Army of Darkness, it was in that.
You do recognize it when you see it.
They've been using Bronson Cave since the 30s. Yeah, because it's a very like classic looking cave, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's clearly a space that they can use to film in because of the way it's sort of laid out. It gives them room to move cameras and stuff like that. So I can see how they would continue to go to it. But back to Rat with the family. So what if they are sort of like the first ones who actually have an actual interaction with one of these sort of drone organic hybrids?
Right? Well, we could set this in like the opening of the invasion. So we could set it in a rural neighborhood. This kind of opens up like Dawn of the Dead would, like the remake where she's waking up and the kid next door kid's trying to eat her. But we could actually have these drones coming down and crushing people's heads or crushing around people's heads all around them as they're trying to escape this. So it becomes more of a survival film. Now, do we want somebody to be a famous scientist? Is there going to be a way out of this, or isn't there? Do we have Roman become somebody who becomes infatuated with somebody in this family, or how do we have him learn that maybe humanity is worth saving, or do we just not? And it becomes a survival film and there's no escaping this.
I want to go with the no escaping. It's so easy to go with the Independence Day ending where it's like, we fought off the aliens and the Earth has been saved. I really like the idea of there being, I mean, it now turns into Walking Dead or Mad Max or something like that. It's sort of almost post-apocalyptic where you have your like little clusters of survivors. But I think that that's a lot more interesting way of ending it because realistically, if we were invaded by an alien culture, we'd lose. No fucking ifs, ands, or buts about it. We would lose. So I think it gives it an element of realism. I think the movie ending with, to throwback to one of our other episodes, sort of that Red Dawn sort of little clusters of rebels still trying to fight the good fight. I think that's a better ending to me.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds pretty dark for something we want to keep as a comedy though.
And that's the catch. I think it's how do you sort of keep that light sort of goofiness and still have a really powerful and poignant ending. And that's where my theory falls apart, doesn't it?
Well, you know, we could have this family doing the things we want them to do, surviving and escaping, but maybe joining up or meeting some people who do have some ideas. Like, okay, if these are drones, how can you do a mass hack? Or like, are they susceptible to EMP? I don't want to use that because it's a fucking trope that I'm tired of.
But, and the science, the movie science is way, way, way different than the actual science too. So yeah, I did have an idea, but you go ahead and finish your thought and then I'll share my idea with you.
Well, that was pretty much my thought. Like, we can have, like, if there is some sort of control to these drones, like, or at least some sort of artificial intelligence, or are they these connected to the beings that are individuals that are going to invade later, once they've remotely gotten rid of humanity. And that would be interesting too, if like there was, these were like psychically linked to the bodies that they are possessing through these orbs that have attached to their heads of humanity and the other denizens of our world, that if there was some sort of feedback sent back to the aliens, that they might reconsider or even drop dead through that connection.
That's kind of where I was going. What I was thinking is that if we kind of give that sort of semi-hopeful ending where, yeah, most of humanity has actually been wiped out, but the humans that are survived have found ways to bring the organic drones over to their side. So you sort of, and they're kind of goofy because of the way they interact with human beings. They become even goofier because they've broken their connection somehow with the great guidance or whatever we call the leader of the alien invasion. And then there's that hope that they can rebuild. And they now are using these alien monsters as
a labor force, using our Earth technologies. Absolutely. Which is probably why they move clumsily.
The tools to rebuild.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They were kind of on the same wavelength there, but
yeah, I kind of dig that. And that's kind of a funny idea as well. And it still plays back to, okay, we've got the remnants of humanity and the message of we got to do things differently because these guys wanted to wipe us out before we destroyed our planet and made it unusable and uninhabitable. So in a way, they were kind of saving our planet and using it for themselves. But it's also a message saying, hey, we need to rethink what we're doing as well. In a way, we're reusing the corpses that all the aliens made.
Yeah.
So we're recycling humanity.
Yeah. And you know what? You could almost have it end the way the original movie starts, where it's just a small family playing in a field and they're happy and they're joyful and they want to play space aliens and they want to play house and they're just enjoying the fact that they're free of all the shackles of all the shit that we've tied ourselves to. They have a house, they have food, and they have no war, they have no bills, they just live.
Yeah, with not a whole lot of humanity left. I mean, I'm sure there'll be more Nate, but a small enough to repopulate the species over time, I would think. A plausible amount of people. But yeah, to live life more simply with less technology, at least less environmentally damaging technology, and having to start again. There's a hopeful note at the end of the movie.
Yeah, and you could have like the alien drones out there like hoeing fields and, right, like you can see them being, I mean, it could be an allegory for slavery now at this point, but at the same time, you can sort of see how they've turned the tide and they're making use of these things. And now they've managed to somehow break the connection to the great guidance and they're simple machines now instead of these sort of powerful human killing monsters.
I have a sequel.
There we go.
I have a sequel because yes, they are taken over the technology. And I mean, anything that these orbs have clamped around are corpses, essentially. They're just animated corpses. But I like your idea of it being slavery. So there's still some sort of synapses firing so they could control these through the aliens, and humanity, the remaining humanity's figured out how to control it too. The sequel is a zombie movie.
There we go.
Because eventually they lose control of the connection and these corpses are rebelling, and it has a different message. Rebelling against slavery.
Yeah, there we go.
So humanity's still the bad guy, but but that would be our sequel.
No, I kind of like the idea of leaving it that way, so it still has that hope, that hopeful ending, but humanity by no means wins.
It's a dour ending, but at least it has a hopeful ending. Yeah, I kind of dig that. And it's kind of got like, this is the end type of vibes, if you've ever seen that movie, which was kind of a end of the world scenario, apocalyptic comedy.
Yeah, and it can work. I mean, you need better writers than us to do some of the fine tuning, but conceptually, I think that's
way
less contrived.
We're awesome writers. We do all this on the fly, man. if we sat down to write this thing, we'd be damn good at
maybe.
It.
Maybe. You're right. Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think I like that whole idea of, like just sort of starting it with like a full-fledged invasion. You could have sort of like that first contact with the drone zombies. That's their name now, drone zombies. And then sort of watching that sort of that invasion sort of expand and the slow decimation of humanity coming back around to where they figure a way to break the connection to the alien leadership and sort of disconnecting these drones from their guidance system, the great guidance. And then sort of show that humanity rediscovering their humanity rather than just sort of the big flag waving, oh yeah, we won ending. It's more like, you know, there's something good to come out of this, even though most of humanity is gone.
Yeah. And I like that we used the great guidance in here too. And if there were drones, like things like Extension XJ2,
that makes a lot more sense.
That was our Roman, was Extension XJ2, like you're dialing an operator using an extension. So I kind of like that. It's like, okay, tapping in, we need to tap into this particular unit. So having designations does make sense.
It totally does. And you know what? I think I figured out sort of our device for taking out the great guidance as well. So, I mean, I'm assuming that there's going to have to be some sort of feedback system between our drones and the guidance, right? So what if we figure out some sort of device that's not EMP to provide like a feedback that just completely shorts out that system and completely breaks that connection to the aliens? It doesn't get rid of them, which also leaves it, these are kind of open-ended that way as well, but it does break, they lose control of whatever they've already got on the planet.
Yeah, no, I think that's what we were discussing before, and I totally like that feedback idea. And of course, we're going to need some sort of nerd character, but I didn't cast one. I'm sure we can come up with one, though.
Well, and that can be the professor character.
Oh, that's true. I guess I do have one.
But if I'm casting that nerd character, I'm completely changing it to Stanley Tucci.
Oh, okay. Well, since you're just so gung-ho, why don't you give
me... No, he wasn't my original one. I'm just throwing that out there. I love him in that type of role. So I'll have two of them. One of them can... I've just added a cast member. Stanley Tucci is one of my geniuses.
Okay. That's cool. I like that. I fully support that. Maybe Ted Raimi.
Ooh, he'd be fun too.
Yeah. Not in my cast list, but I like that. Ted Raimi.
Well, I mean, we can add to the cast all we want now. We can change it. It doesn't matter. Yeah, so yeah, Ted Raimi's in our movie.
Yay! It does feel like this could be a Raimi movie, actually.
It really does. My director does not fit what we're coming up with. So, yeah, we'll just throw Raimi in there. Or Burton, either one. I would take either one.
Right. I don't have either. I did have at least a director in mind that had done like an alien invasion kind of action comedy. And he already was successful at it.
I'll explain my rationale behind my director when I get to him, but yeah, I was getting in a different direction initially.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll let you go last. Since there's only the two of us today and I usually end this, I'll start with mine. For my Roy, who I kind of want to make a little more cocky and fun, and I'm sure if he rips off his shirt, at least the girls will be happy. Sean William Scott from American Pie.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, give him some more roles.
Yeah, I think he's highly underrated, and despite the fact that he stepped into the shoes in Lethal Weapon, the TV series, I thought he did a darn good job.
I don't think that was his fault. I think that was just circumstances.
No, he was brought in as a replacement, but I think he did good under the circumstances, despite that was a sinking ship before it started. For Alice, and I did go older than teen because I didn't think that was relevant in our version. I went with Elizabeth Olsen, mainly because there's a segment that I really dug. And between her kind of being able to do that 50s style acting in WandaVision and what Claudia Barrett does in that scene when she says she's going to meet Roman. And it's kind of this over-the-top dramatic scene arguing with her parents and Roy before she gets tied up. And I really liked how that scene played out. It kind of actually reminded me of a scene from Big Trouble Little China as well, that kind of acting style. And I'm like, you know, I would love to see Elizabeth Olsen do that scene like that way and act that way. I really, just over the top, I kind of would like to see that.
Yeah, she could do that really well, actually.
Yeah. For Johnny, and you know how we all love doing child actors, so I'm sure two of the people who ducked out are really happy not to cast today. I went with Maxwell Jenkins from Lost in Space, the TV Netflix version.
Okay, yeah, and I didn't cast the kids for that very reason. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I started to look, and I'm like, you know, by the time this gets off, these actors are going to be way out of the age range anyhow.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, we're just fantasy casting as if they're being made today. But, I mean, yeah, clearly if we started even the pre-production, they'd probably already be too old for these roles because they'd probably be a couple years away from shooting. For George the Professor, I went with Steve Carell.
Okay, I get that. Yeah. And he totally works in a comedic slightly version as well.
Yeah, right? And being the nerdy type of scientist guy, I think that would work really well. For little Carla, who's doomed to die. Oh my God. Poor little Carla. Brooklyn Prince from The Florida Project and Home Before Dark.
Cool.
Yeah. For the mother, Martha.
Why'd you use that name?
Thank you. Thank you for the polite chuckle.
Yes, no, hey, I actually audibly made a noise of amusement.
Yes, you did.
Just like revel in that.
I did. I'll call that a success. Lauren Graham for Mother and Martha from Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
Well, she went from not having a whole lot of dialogue to we got to write her a lot of dialogue because she's really good at it. And for the voice of Roman, I went with Tony Todd.
Oh.
Because he's mainly going to be a special effect now, so... Yeah. And he was mainly a body double and a voice. So now it's going to be fairly similar. You're going to have somebody doing mocap and another person doing the voice.
Yes. And that actually works. I actually cast a voice and a body. And this could actually work out really well with our version as well. I can't wait to sort of explain my rationale behind this now that I'm thinking about it on the fly as usual.
And for my director, I'm with Joe Cornish from Attack the Block.
Okay.
Yeah. You can see where my thought process was because he's kind of already done this once.
Yes. Yes, he has.
And I think adding a little bit of cheesy flair to the basic concept of Attack the Block would work really well.
Yeah. I can get behind him as a director as well. Yeah. Any one of the three that we've named, I think would work really well on that. Would do this justice at least.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, what do you got?
Okay. So I'm going to start with my Alice. So I went with Emma Stone as my Alice. Because I think she can also sort of lean into that sort of 50s style. We haven't seen her really do it, but I think she kind of does that anyhow.
Yeah, I think there is something like that's kind of naturally in her that, yeah, I can totally buy that.
Yeah, there's always like this knowing wink in her performances. Like she's like, she knows she's performing, but she also delivers a really great performance in the process. For my Roy, I went with Lakeith Stanfield. I thought that because I wanted a character who was working with the scientist, with the professor. So I wanted somebody who was maybe a little less traditionally handsome, but also still maybe a little bit sciencey. And I thought that he was a good balance of that.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
For Mother or Martha, and actually I cast Emma Stone because I'd already cast Mother. I cast Julianne Moore as Mother.
Ah, yeah, another good actress.
Yeah, and could you see them as mother and daughter? Like,
yeah, totally.
That's it. It's just like, I have to. For my professor, I was kind of leaning into the sort of the 50s kind of style. So I'm with George Clooney. I think he'd do that really well, sort of the ruggedly handsome professor.
Yeah.
Sort of. And you know what? I kind of want him to be my father figure. So at least that makes sense now.
Yeah. No, that really works. I like the look of that. And
yeah.
I'd go see that.
Yeah, exactly. And then for my Roman / Great Guidance, I went with Samuel L. Jackson as the voice and then Dwayne Johnson as the body. Now, picture this. Now that we're sort of doing the sort of orb drone zombie, imagine Dwayne Johnson sort of like gorilla-ish with his head and delivering his lines as a zombie. I'm sorry. I bet you he'd do it for like spec.
Yeah, just as like even a cameo. I wouldn't even do it as a gorilla per se. Like I'd actually have him as a separate character. You got your gorilla Roman, and then there's Dwayne the Rock Johnson, and he's trying to hold this thing open. He's actually succeeded in ripping a couple apart before one finally clamps on his head. And now you just have his body walking around.
And I just like totally camp it up. And I can guarantee you he would happily do it. He's gotten...
That's a great place to put in a bunch of like celebrity cameos where you actually have to imagine the celebrity. If you couldn't actually get them to at least spoof the celebrity, but you gotta be able to recognize them from the neck down because it's just going to be a skull rattling in the fishbowl.
Yeah. So you get your Momoa, right? Because I mean, his tattoos are instantly recognizable, right?
Yeah.
So,
same as the Rock's.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like you just see the two of them sort of just walking down the street with a little skull rattling around their head and,
Accompanying a gorilla.
Yeah.
I love it. Ladies are going, what do I need the head for anyway? I'm saying what Trish would think. Yeah. I'm going to say what Trish would say today.
Yes. You can be the voice of Trish.
Yeah.
As you were reading through your cast, I'm like, oh, I can see this going some fun places. Because, I mean, if you think about Mars Attacks and how many celebrity cameos were actually in that, I'd like to see some of that sort of happening with these drones where they're getting converted. And at the end, you could even have that Dwayne Johnson or Jason Momoa sort of drone being the one that's working the fields.
Yeah, that I like that. What about somebody like really thin, like
Stephen Merchant
or Kate Moss? So like, yeah, it attaches to their head and they just fall over because they're top heavy.
Yeah, I can. That's working for me too. Yeah,
they're trying to walk around, but their head's kind of dragging on the ground, or at least off to the side, because it's just now it's too heavy for the body.
Yeah, or they've got the helmet on the ground, and they're pushing themselves, with their legs kind of just sort of sliding forward with their butts up in the air or something like that.
Yeah, because if the drones still have capable flight, it's just dragging their bodies along because there was barely enough energy to keep them going when they were human.
Oh, now see, now the humor is really starting to come out. I think that and that's where a lot of the humor is going to be, is sort of these absurd sort of mashups that we're going to get from these drones attaching themselves and turning them into these automatons. But I just like the visuals are just sort of popping into my head throughout. I mean, they don't even have to be, there's so many celebrity ones that we could do that you almost don't want to overdo it. But I love the animal hybrid ones too, like the fishbowl. One, I love your idea of having the fish swimming around around one of them. That's great.
We can have like some, once the initial clampdown invasion happened, and we can call it the clampdown. Because, you know, once that's done and it becomes survival from trying to escape these things, but then you can have like some physics jokes too, where you can kind of do a top down where somebody's, I don't know, bulldozer or, and play pool with a group of these guys as you try to bounce one off each other. But yeah, there's all sorts of fun visual gags you can do with that.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Oh, and my director. So when I first started thinking about it, I'm like, I was thinking about sort of that, the dream sequence and how that didn't work in the original, but somebody like Christopher Nolan could quite conceivably make that work better with the story. So that's where I sort of went with Christopher Nolan, because I was thinking, if in the event we kept it, I wanted somebody who could work with that and really fuck with your head throughout the process.
Let's be honest, Christopher Nolan wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole. But
oh no,
good choice nonetheless.
Yeah, well, if we were going with a more serious tone, I could totally see him sort of having a little bit of fun with something like that. But yeah, he doesn't have fun; he's too serious.
Well, I mean, he can be fun, but yeah, it's not funny. We've never really seen him do funny.
No, that's true. Right. So yeah, with what we've come up with, he's not a good choice, but we have come up with some good alternates. Certainly your choice and then Raimi or Burton.
Yeah.
Although I want Burton to stay away from remakes because he does so much better with his original stuff. So yeah, let's go with Raimi.
Yeah.
Or your director.
I'm with you there. But yeah, no, there's a few good options for sure. And I think we've come up with something fun yet exciting and at times even horrifying. So it's kind of run the gamut of like sci-fi horror comedy. And we may have even found a half decent balance on it. Like Mars Attacks kind of did all three fairly successfully as well. At least I think so.
And I totally agree with you on that.
That's kind of the tone I think we are trying to channel here.
Exactly. Yes. I think the victory comes just a lot further along in the invasion process where we sort of have that homage to the original with there being in sort of these small pockets of humanity, not just eight people. So there's still hope and victory, but it's at a very substantial cost.
Yeah, exactly. And we have laid the groundwork for a different tonal sequel as well, which well, I didn't see coming. But this could be a good, fun event, summer event film, actually.
It could very easily, yeah.
Yeah, to do that off of such a terrible film, I don't know if I would be successful, but goddamn, it'd be sure fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm like, as we're talking, I'm like, oh God, I need to see this now. It's been a while since we've
copyright
done one
invasion
of
the remake.
Yeah.
Now they have to buy it off us.
Exactly. At least the general concept of the remake. But yeah, it's been a while since we've sort of talked out one where I'm like, I think we have something that I would actually want to watch. I think we've done lots of great remakes, but this one's because I'm actually seeing the whole movie in my head.
Yeah. No, I might actually want to script more of this, but yeah, the initial, after I watched it, I'm like, God, I really want to keep the visual of this kind of fishbowl helmet on the gorilla.
And how do you do that?
And how do we do that? Now we've done in such a way where we've integrated it into the story in a kind of fun invasion, but also horrific kind of parodying
itself. Yeah. Yeah. But also kind of a parody. Yeah.
Yeah. So to find that kind of balance is, yeah, I'm pretty proud of what we did here today.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah. I think that we've done, quite a bit with some pretty rough material.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wasn't expecting us to stay in the '50s for Alien Invasion April, but I think we've done pretty good so far. We got one more for you next week and it's a biggie because we are going to finally do pretty much our namesake. Invasion of the Body Snatchers is next week, and we are going to cover all four of those movies and then some. So it's going to be a different format than we normally do. We're going to kind of try to do it because we're talking about four movies. We're going to be trying to talk about it like we would our 31 Days of Horror episodes or like a werewolf themed episode. So it's going to be a little more open discussion and less digging into each and every movie because it's going to be a lot of movies and a lot of content. So a little more loose conversation, but that is going to be our closing out Alien Invasion April. And then we'll hopefully get to your fan challenges. Wait, fan challenges? What the heck? How do we do one of those? Well, you can follow us for one on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com, where you can email us those suggestions, your corrections, and your comments. You can do those at any of those social media places, and you can make your fan challenges there as well. Now, in the case of a fan challenge, I do have some rules. Nothing after the year 2000. I'll consider foreign films, but we had one recently. It was a great suggestion. Unfortunately, it was actually a really good movie as well. So I honestly thought we'd only make it worse. So we'll try to maybe add it into our 31 Days of Horror in October rather than do a full fan challenge episode around it. Just because I kind of want to see it. It was a good suggestion. It just, I didn't think it was something we should remake. But usually the post 2000 stuff, it still seems too recent to me. So I'd rather do something a little older, had a nugget of a good idea. And of course, let us know where we can find that suggestion, source it for us. So if it's on a streaming service or it's available on to order on Amazon, wherever you find it, let us know. It makes our job a little easier and ups your chances of that episode actually getting made. So you can send those suggestions to us and we will vet it. We will consider it and then we will let you know whether we'll do it or not. But be patient. If we've said yes to one of your suggestions, we got other programming we want to do too. So just be patient. We'll get to them. And of course, we'll name drop you when we do. Now, Sam.
Darn right. Yes.
How else can they help us out? Maybe by going to our website, maybe?
Maybe. And we may even add a forum to make the fan challenges easier. I was thinking about that while you're explaining it. I like that way to tick off all the criteria in advance. But before that, you can just go to invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast to see all of our past episodes, as well as use our contact form to do a fan challenge as well.
That's right. And while you're there, share that site out with all your friends and family, and then they can find the most convenient way to listen to us. We're available on pretty much all major podcatchers at this point, so it's really easy to find us. But while you're on that page, there's a little store button there, and that'll take you to our TeePublic store, and you'll find lots of great designs, some that may even been inspired by this very episode. So go check it out. Lots of cool designs. And some that are already up from Alien Invasion April, and we'll try to get some more up as we have the time to do so. But check it out. Lots of cool designs. They have sales often, so make sure you sign up. And if you don't want to pay the full price, just wait for a sale and then pick it up then. But lots of cool stuff. And just know that every sale goes 100% back into the production of the show. Well, I guess that's it for this week with Robot Monster. It was a bit of a tough watch, but at the same time, it was fun.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, if it had been a longer film, it would have been really, 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 really challenging. But it was short enough that I didn't disconnect from it like I might have. So yeah, no, it was fun. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Even if I was confused.
Yeah, well, the confusion does come with it at the beginning and the end, but Once you just realize his dream sequence and like, all right, dream logic, it just, that it explains why the narrative is just completely out the fucking window. No point in playing the rating game on this one. I already said 3.0 out of 10 from IMDb, and Rotten Tomatoes is 36% across the board between critics and fans. So nobody likes it, but that's part of the fun, is they like not liking it. That makes sense?
Yeah.
It is a good bad movie. There's a reason why the first season of Mystery Science Theater covered it. And yeah, it would be a lot of fun just to get a group of people when it's safe to do so and watch it, or do an online watch party and watch Robot Monsters and just text each other while you're watching it. That could be fun too. I wish we had done that, because it would have been a lot of fun.
And Trish would have watched the right movie.
Well, she's well ahead of us on Invasion of the Body Snatchers next week.
Yeah, she has less work to do next week. Yeah,
that's right. Well, look forward to Invasion of the Body Snatchers next week, and then I'll close out Alien Invasion April. And then we'll probably give science fiction a little bit of a rest after that. But we will try to fit in your fan challenges during May and June. We'll see what we can do there, but we'll try to start playing catch up on those every few weeks. And don't feel like you have to challenge us to remake something either. If there's a remake you know is out there, we haven't covered it. I mean, we'll probably cover it at some point, but if you want us to maybe consider moving it up on the queue and getting it sooner rather than later, you can also make those suggestions as well. It's like, hey, you know, why haven't you covered this yet? Well, we're doing lots of stuff, but we'll eventually get to it. And if it's popped into our brain, it might happen sooner.
Yeah, that's the only exception is the thing. That one, don't even suggest it.
Yeah, no. we will do the thing, but it's going to be a long way off. We're saving that for something special.
We don't even know what the special is yet, but
no, we'll know it when we see it.
Yeah.
It could be a round one. It could be a rounded off number. Like, we got 300 coming up soon.
We do, and 6-year anniversary.
Yeah.
All coming up pretty close together, so.
Yeah. So we do have some events. Not saying it's going to be this year, though. I'm just saying we're saving it. I don't know when. We'll get there. All right. Well, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And they continue to be whoever they are, wherever they are. We'll catch you next week. We are out of here.
Captured the girl and not destroyed her. Fact, you have delayed accepting the surrender of the others. This verges on failure.
There is one thing you do not understand, great guidance. You reject the plan? I wish to make an estimate of my own. To think for yourself is to be like the human. Yes, to be like the human. To laugh, feel, want. Why are these things not in the plan? You are an extension of the Roman, and a Roman you will remain. Now I set you into motion. 1. Destroy the girl. 2. Destroy the family. Fail, and I will destroy you. I cannot. Yet I must. How do you calculate that? At what point on the graph you must and cannot meet? Yet I must. What I cannot.